Majority Report with Sam Cedar. It's time to look in the mirror, America. Do you like what you see? Pick up the mirror now, America. Go ahead, pick it up. What are you, afraid? It's just a mirror, America. What could it do to you except reflect your image? The Majority Report.
It is Thursday, December... Somebody help me out here. 13th.
January.
What, is it already January? You're kidding.
I can't believe it myself.
It is Thursday, January 13th, 2011. My name is Sam Cedar. This is the Majority Report. We are broadcasting live from the literal, though not metaphorical, shadow of the New York Times building in the fashionable Dollar Lunch District of New York City. And just moments ago, well, let's say probably an hour or two, former Republican House Majority Leader, the Hammer, Tom DeLay, was on the Today Show, I guess it was. And, well, that's basically what he was saying about his recent conviction and sentencing to 3 years. Of course, he's out on appeal, but this is this classic Republican response to when they get caught with their hands in the cookie jar. Saying that he's headed to jail, not because of guilty any wrongdoing, but because of the politicization of his trial. I was tried in the most liberal county in the state of Texas. Indeed, in the United States. Ah, right, okay. And the, that is your perfect example of conservatives and personal responsibility. The prosecutors were liberal. The judge was liberal. The jury was liberal. The evidence was liberal. The laws were liberal. The money that I laundered, liberal. Laundering, liberal. The idea of laundering, liberal. Elections, liberal. Laws, liberal. States, countries, liberal. Air, liberal. It all conspired against me. If only the government had allowed me to use toxic pesticides that hurt children and animals, I would have never been inspired to go into government. And if I had never been inspired to go into government, I would have never assumed a leadership position. I would have never been in a position in which to launder money and break election laws, thus proving this is all a liberal conspiracy. If I had been allowed to poison children and animals in the furtherance of killing pests, I would not be facing 3 years in this land. Frankly, he should be. I don't know why he got such a break. It could have been lifetime. I'll tell you something. I can tell you right now, as he is staring at prison time. Now, of course, it could be years of appeals, and I'm sure they're going to try and drag it out as long as they can. But I can tell you what he's going to be doing during most of that time. He's going to be trying to get and destroy all tapes of him on Dances with Stars. That's not how you want to go into prison, folks. You don't want that floating around out there. Tom DeLay, taking to the airwaves. I mean, I presume what he's trying to do is raise money or, I don't know. I don't know. Well, last night there was a, I'm not really sure how to categorize it. It was a memorial service of sorts entitled Together We Thrive, Tucson and America, the president was there. He spoke, and it was incredibly moving. I didn't see the earlier speakers, but it was a, I don't know, raucous is the right word, but in some respects it was a rally for Tucson, and a rally for Arizona, and a a rally for the country to get past this type of violence. And there were moments in the speech which were incredibly moving. And I had, you know, I have access on occasion to speeches such as this beforehand. They send them out. And even having the speech in front of me and watching it, there were still moments that were incredibly moving. And perhaps one of the most moving aspects of it were the reaction of the people in Arizona. They were applauding at the news that Gabrielle Giffords had opened her eyes, that she is at least non-verbally communicating with her doctors and her husband. She apparently has the ability to touch her nose, which from a neurological standpoint is, I guess, from what I understand, fairly stunning. After having a bullet pass through your brain. And there was something like 28,000 people in the University of Arizona's McHale Center. There was overflow crowds of at least something like 10,000. And the university president said this is a chance to exalt going forward. Maybe you had to be in the environment talking about how people from the outside were sort of questioning the tone of it in some respects. And by people from the outside, I mean, of course, conservatives. You know, what was really sort of grotesque about the evening, I mean, the sort of juxtaposition. You know, when I watch events on television now, I am always on my computer, and I'm also, you know, following on Twitter. And to see, like, Andrew Breitbart just sending out missive after missive after missive on Twitter, trying to poison the atmosphere. Even guys like John Hankey, who is considered one of the sort of more supposed, you know, a libertarian type, not a necessarily a movement conservative type, questioning, is it appropriate that there's clapping going on there? You know, to watch these people try and find a crack in which to just, it's just stunning. It's stunning. There's something really mentally wrong with them. And, you know, to a certain extent, I mean, look, professionally speaking, you know, I would not argue that I am not in the same sort of, like, species as some of these people. I mean, I was a comedian and a writer for the better part of my professional career, and I have an intense interest in politics, and I have, you know, I have a background educationally in government, and but, you know, I'm not offended by the notion that you are, if someone was to say to me that you are a left-wing version of these type of people, you know, I attempt to disseminate news, and I have a clear liberal perspective on these stories. But it's moments like these where it becomes even that much more disturbing to me, because I cannot imagine myself sending out these type of missives on Twitter, or even really frankly having these type of thoughts at moments like this. It's just that much more stunning to me, because I do sort of look at these people as, you know, within the same sort of profession that I'm in, to the extent that I'm in a profession. You know, Obama's speech was, I think, exactly what he is good at. Being, you know, postpartisan in some sorts, and sort of attempting. And I think this is when he, you know, his entrance into politics is very much about moments like these, where he, and, you know, it's not, I don't think you need to be a I don't think it's you know, being too much of an armchair psychiatrist to say here's a guy who is a child of an interracial marriage who wrote extensively in his memoirs about sort of this duality of being in two worlds, moving from sort of a white world and a black world as a child, and sort of struggling with his identity in that respect. And I think, you know, moments like these where he sees an opportunity to bring people together, I think that's sort of where he sees his calling. Now, you know, I may have issue with that from a political standpoint, but it's hard to even contemplate the idea that anybody would want him to go in and politicize that environment. Yet the right, you know, apparently they were upset that there were T-shirts for this event. And it, to me, are T-shirts appropriate? I don't know. I mean, it was billed as this type of rally. It was, you know, I guess T-shirts are a way in the same way that, like, people would wear ribbons or buy 9/11 commemorative coins or, you know, I'm sitting here staring at a rapper from playing cards from Desert Storm. You know, this is the nature of our society. People like to have some type of physical material manifestation of all sorts of moments. And Adam Serwer on his blog at Tapped had a piece where he was just sort of ruminating on this and said, you know, that when I go to funerals, I keep the programs as some type of commemoration. So, and you know, even the Republican mayor of Tucson said, asked if the mood was appropriate. He said to Politico, "Oh yes, yes. If there was one thing that was appropriate, it was cheering. I've been in the hospital, and the people there, people that are healing, they want to hear people cheer." So it was, you know, it was a very moving speech, and I'm sure you can find it online if you missed it. Now, of course, Speaker John Bonaire, in a, you know, this again, it's, you know, and there's going to be a lot of talk, and there already is, about comparing Palin's speech with Obama's, and just sort of how Palin's speech is was so me-directed, you know, talking about that the real crime of this is that there's been blood libel against me. And I actually read a funny piece that was sent to me by a listener from, let's see if I can pull that up, from, it really was quite impressive. Yes, Beyond Religion with Rabbi Rami, at rabbirami.blogspot, where he talks about it is, I think it was a fairly satirical piece where he said, it is unbelievable that people are attempting to drink her blood or the Jews are doing that, or whatever it was. But, and, you know, the tone deafness on the right is stunning. John Bonaire refused to travel with Obama on Air Force One to Arizona for a memorial service, for this service. And instead, went to a reception for a former House GOP aide who is seeking the Republican National Committee chairmanship. So it was, he basically went to a Washington, D.C. reception, cocktail party, to raise money for her to be RNC chief. And, you know, of course, they felt a little defensive about it when they realized, like, oh, this. And so Bonaire's aides noted that the speaker will complete his remarks on Chino's candidacy before Obama's speech. As if, like, well, we're showing some deference. Bonaire's not going to be speaking. We're not going to, let's put it this way. We're not going to allow for a split screen. Is it inappropriate for me to say that if maybe if the president had said open bar on Air Force One, Bonaire would have attended? And just to follow up on our little mini debate yesterday with Matt from my Twitter feed. Turns out somebody sent me a link. You know, when he had mentioned to me, like, do you know there was a guy who was going to bomb the RNC? And I hadn't heard that. But what he ended up referring to was all the preemptive arrests that were made of protesters prior to the RNC. You'll recall that there was an incredible amount of, like, preemptive arrests of protesters of the RNC in Minnesota. And apparently this is one of the guys in the dragnet. So it was not quite clear that this guy was going to bomb anything. He was charged with a plan to disrupt the RNC. But be that as it may, the really stunning thing was that Matt sent me on Twitter shortly after the show ended. He sent me a link to a story about how a Republican, I guess he was a former campaign worker for John McCain, and he was a district chairman, a guy named Anthony Miller, a Republican, district chairman in Arizona, was forced to resign. From his position as district chairman because he was receiving violent threats. And, you know, I mean, I consider myself, at least in some, you know, to some degree, an honest broker. So, you know, I followed through and I started to read the article. Within three paragraphs of the article this guy sends me, it says this guy received death threats from Tea Party members, Republicans who were angry at this guy winning the district chairmanship because he was a McCainite. It turns out he is an African-American, that they referred to him. He's the first African-American to hold the party's precinct chairmanship. Miller said he had been called McCain's boy and during the campaign saw a critic from his hand, form his hand in the shape of a gun and point it at him. I wasn't going to resign, but I decided to quit after what happened Saturday, Miller said. I love the Republican Party, but I don't want to take a bullet for anyone. I would suggest that this guy think, you know, sit down with a psychiatrist and ask him, like, you know, how it is you can have love for a party that is populated with people who are threatening to kill you because you won a district champion, you know, a district committeeship. The newly elected District 20 Republican Secretary, Sophia Johnson of Ahkahwahtake, the first chairman, Roger Dickinson of Tempe, and Jeff Kolb, the former district spokesman from Ahwatukee, I don't know the name of it, also quit. The singular focus on getting Anthony Miller was one of the main reasons I chose to resign, Kolb said in an email to another party activist. Kolb confirmed the contents of the email to the Arizona Republic that's reporting on this. Kolb said the Tea Party and associated conservative groups ran their slate of candidates for seven District 20 leadership positions, winning three. However, Miller beat challenger Thomas Morrissey for the top post after Sheriff Joe Arapio, you remember him, he's the one who's the famous anti-immigrant sheriff. Incidentally, he apparently is allowed to talk politics on a national scale, but Dupnik is not. Miller said when he was a member of McCain's campaign staff there, he had been criticized by the more conservative party members who supported Republican opponent J.D. Hayworth. And so I wrote back on Twitter to Matt, and I said, dude, did you read three paragraphs into the link you just sent me? It was Tea Partiers who did this. And I gather from his subsequent links he sent me, you know, all from Michelle Malkin, that his point was no party leaders singled out Anthony Miller, and so this happens in a vacuum. And he still does not understand the point of all of this, which is when your party leaders create an environment, never mind that they targeted Gabriel Giffords. If they had targeted some other congressperson in Arizona, it wouldn't have made it, the point remains. The point is, you create an environment, you lower the bar as to what is acceptable response to a political loss or to a political issue, and your followers see that lowered bar, project upon the leaders as, okay, they're the margin, I can't go past that, or I can go slightly past that. I mean, do you remember the response that conservatives had to when John McCain said to that lady, famously in the town hall, McCain, Barack Obama is an American citizen. Do you remember that exchange? Mm-hmm. And the lady was interviewed outside the building. And they said, well, what do you think about that? You were convinced that that Obama was not a real citizen. And McCain just told you that he was a real American citizen. And McCain just told you that he was. And she said, well, I understand. He's running for office. He needs to say that. And so if you have your leaders saying things like lock and reload, or I'm going to shoot an M16 to celebrate getting rid of Gabriel Giffords, even if it's that Konjaski who said, you know, we got to hang this guy or put him up against the wall and shoot him, the bar is lowered for what is acceptable for followers. And that is the environment that is created. You know, the alleged Loeffner, the alleged perpetrator of this, the accused, he didn't need to see a speech by Palin or anybody, or know that Giffords' opponent was having an M16 rally to get rid of Giffords. He just needed to be in a culture where the leaders of that culture were driving down the discourse. He just needed to be in an environment where that was happening. Now look, it's inescapable that there are elements in our society that do that. Whether it's, you know, violent video games, or it's music, or violent movies, or whatnot. We can't escape that in a free society. That's just the way it is. But the idea that we cannot ask more of our political leaders, or that there should be some disincentive for those political leaders to talk that way, is simply absurd. That's the bottom line. And I don't know if that it's possible for conservatives to understand that. You know, you look at the way that Breitbart was responding to this speech. It was just stunning. But that is, you know, I don't really have much more to say about it. I mean, I don't know what else there is to say. I mean, hopefully this will change the discourse. There's a lot being reported now on how, you know, even, you know, like I said, I predicted this on day one, and I've been talking about this for a while, that the Republicans were going to find some way of getting Sarah Palin to be understood as a non-viable candidate, and they're using this opportunity. And frankly, you know, aside from my mixed feelings in that, you know, I think that she is the naked id of the Republican Party, and I would rather see a naked example of the Republican Party. I'm, of course, speaking metaphorically. I would rather see a naked example of Republicanism so that people really know what they're getting. Lead the top of their ticket. But hopefully a message is sent. Now, I don't think it will be. But I think it's quite clear that Sarah Palin is going to remain a sort of a sideshow. She will continue to travel around at her gun show slash political rallies. And I don't know. Did someone say they didn't re-up her her reality show? I don't know. Who knows? Who knows? So moving on today. So we may do sort of a shorter show today. It appears that Keith Olbermann is not feeling well. Apparently, I was watching the show last night. It looked like he said at one point, like he implied he may throw up. There's something in that building. Wait, you got to turn on the microphone, dude, when you speak. That's one Sorry. Of the.
You sent him. They're working. Then
the cookie. I don't know what it is at that place, but the first night I went on, I thought. I had gas. I ate something that gave me an issue for 2 months. Not 2 months. 2 weeks. 2 weeks. It finally resolved. And I believe I will be subbing for him as he is ill tonight. This poll out from Reuters, I don't know how really... it's sort of fascinating to me. The U.S. public overwhelmingly opposes raising the country's debt limit. Now, I wonder if they ever took a poll on this during the five times that it happened during the Bush administration.
Right.
My guess is no, because the Republicans were doing it. And, you know, this is the classic case. Democrats have to be responsible because the Republicans are not responsible. That is what, you know, Democrats are for. And that may be the case, but, you know, now what we're seeing is the corporatists using that as leverage to get Democrats to, you know, perhaps cut things like Social Security and whatnot. This is going to be another hostage-taking situation. And it shouldn't be. The 71% of those surveyed oppose increasing the borrowing authority. Now, I'll tell you what this 71% reflects. It reflects the words and the posturing by Republicans and the Tea Party. And I am sure if you sat down with that 71% and said, let me just explain something to you. This debt ceiling, the raising of the debt ceiling has been basically pro forma. Forever. It was raised five times during the Bush administration. And there are many people who believe, and I don't know if I'm necessarily one of them, because my understanding is that, you know, you could print money and there's all sorts of different ways in which to mitigate the implications of this in the short run. But there are many people who believe that if the debt ceiling is not raised, and the United States is not able to borrow more money, you will have a financial apocalypse. It will destroy the stock market. It will grind certain things to a halt, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. I imagine they might answer differently, but they don't know. And it just goes to show you the implications of a little bit of posturing and what, you know, words have. Now, this is, you know, words about the debt, the implications it has on the public, a mostly rational, though perhaps uninformed public. So don't tell me that talking in... you know, about the Second Amendment and the blood of patriots and we're living under tyranny has no impact on crazy people. So the current debt ceiling is $14.3 trillion. It's going to be raised. And it will be raised. The question is, will the Democrats allow the Republicans to engage in this kabuki theater where the Republicans say, well, we're not going to raise the debt ceiling, And unless you cut Social Security, unless you cut food stamps, unless you cut mental health services, unless you cut support for states and municipalities to plow their roads, to pick up trash, to have cops and firemen and teachers. And that's Lindsey Graham is going to come out and go, like, I don't think it's appropriate for us to do this because I'm up for re-election and the conservatives hate me, so I've got a posture. What's interesting, though, is, you know, the Republicans, this Reuters story, Republicans have vowed to slash $60 billion from the budget as soon as March. I got news for you. 2 months ago, Republicans vowed to cut $100 billion from the budget. 3 months ago, Republicans were vowing to cut and cut and cut and cut. And as they get closer to actually having to cut services for their constituents, they start to realize it may be a little bit trickier than we thought. Which is why the debt ceiling had to be raised five times under Republicans. Because they do not have a governing... Their philosophy is not one which lends itself to governing. Their philosophy is one which lends itself to dismembering government. To destroying government. But for its capacity to redistribute wealth upwards. Period. 24% of the country, only 24% say the country can afford to cut back on education spending. We'll see Republicans cut on education spending. With your boy Christie over there.
We're big fans.
Cut $900 million from education? Was that what it was?
I think that's right, yeah.
That's exactly what New Jersey needs, a less educated populace. 21% support cuts to law enforcement. 51% support cutbacks to military spending. Guess what's not going to happen? Less than half, 45%, want to cut environmental enforcement. 53% support cutting the budgets of financial regulators, like the Securities and Exchange Commission. That's a great idea. It seems to me we had some type of, what was that thing that we had? Drove this country into a recession. What is it? It starts with an F. Financial meltdown. Financial meltdown. I mean, these numbers say three things to me. One, we have a very divided country. Two, nobody wants to cut programs that liberals support because only 20% support cutting Social Security and 23% support cutting Medicare. So one is we have a very divided country because the only thing that there can be more than 25% support for, it seems, is basically split in half, 50%. Two, we have a country that more or less supports liberal programs. And three, we have a very uneducated population. 73% support cutting foreign aid, which would save us... virtually nothing. 65% support cutting back on tax collection, which would then increase the debt because we don't have revenue. So the three takeaways from that, to the extent that people really support something, it's liberal programs. To the extent that they don't really support something, either the country is really divided or people are just showing that they're completely ignorant. Oh, it's going to be a bumpy ride, ladies and gentlemen. Going to be a very bumpy ride. And Moody's, and Moody's? S&P and Moody's, these bond rating companies, are suggesting they might downgrade U.S. debt. This is in time for the debt, you know, the debt ceiling issue. These are the two companies that basically packaged garbage. Not packaged garbage, I'm sorry. We're in charge of rating the quality of literally, shit-soaked paper. Let's put it that way. In the form of these multiply derived mortgages, mortgage-backed securities. As as AAA investments. So their ratings are rather suspect. But be that as it may, it's also worth noting that from Dean Baker, that Japan's debt was downgraded by S&P back in 2001 and in 98 by Moody's. And the interest rate on Japan's 10-year treasury bonds is currently a bit over 1%. In other words, despite the fact that their bond rating was downgraded by Moody's and S&P, investors don't care. So much so that they think it's such a safe investment, they're willing to take 1% return. Which I think is basically under or pretty close to being at par with inflation. They consider it like putting it in a bank. And it has had not much effect on Japan's ability to borrow, because obviously if you only have to offer 1% interest to get a loan, then you're not in much trouble. People are buying your loans. People are loaning you money, I should say. Interesting attempt by the Third Way, and this is relevant, folks. You need to educate yourself about what the Third Way is. It is essentially the DLC, the corporatist Dems, whose one of his board of directors is now the chief of staff of the President of the United States, a man named William Daley, who I've spoken to in the past. They have come out with a response to the Ibanez case, which I walked you through the other day. This Ibanez case was a case decided by the Massachusetts Supreme Court, and it found that two banks could not foreclose, or a bank, I should say, could not foreclose on a property owned by someone named Ibanez because they could not prove that they owned the mortgage, because they could not show a proper chain of transference of that mortgage, which was transferred about, I think, I walked through this the other day, about a half a dozen times, and went from its loan originator to another bank that had bought it through three or four subsidiaries of Lehman Brothers, which is now bankrupt, came out the other side, was sold to one bank and then to another bank. Maybe it was Bank One was the bank at the end. I can't remember off the top of my head. And Bank One cannot go back and show a proper transference to them, to the court. And so the court says, well, look, I got news for you. We can't prove that you own this mortgage, so you can't foreclose here. Now, I reported on a story last week that the Fed, in this slightly different story, that the Fed was trying to change foreclosure rules, that if you could prove that your original loan was fraudulent, that while you'd have to pay back the money you borrowed, if the terms were fraudulent, and you could prove that to a court, the holder of that loan could not foreclose on your property, but you still were responsible for paying back the loan. The Fed wants to change that to where they can foreclose on you. Even though you have proved that that fraud. Well, now Third Way is coming out with another with a different attempt to essentially whitewash this whole problem of mortgage transference, the whole robo-signer problem, the whole MERS signing problem, which was an electronic system essentially put in place so that banks could skirt the registration fees and the fees from counties to register transferences of these foreclosures. Third Way is suggesting that the U.S. Congress should jump in and essentially make a law to whitewash all those transfers in retrospect, changing literally hundreds of years of property law, taking this out of the hands of the municipalities and the states. And it's a bunch of bullshit, but you should be aware of it, because they're going to keep pushing and pushing and pushing this way, because they know that there is a major amount of fraud out there, and that if this fraud is uncovered, or if the courts begin to hold these banks accountable, much of the way that they have created this sort of Ponzi scheme is going to unravel. And guys like CEOs of J.P. Morgan, like coincidentally William Daley, stand to lose a lot of money. I should say former, because now he's chief of staff, the president. WikiLeaks, Julian Assange says he has insurance files. Those are files that if he sort of gets killed, assassinated, sent to Guantanamo, which sounds a little bit like hyperbole at this point. It would be hard to do that without, but, you know, one of the reasons why I feel compelled to bring up these stories is so that it makes it harder for something like that to happen. But he has insurance files. Should any harm come to him or WikiLeaks, there are 504 U.S. embassy cables on one broadcasting organization, and there are cables on Murdoch and News Corp. That should help get a little more public attention for his play. And what's the connection between whistleblowing on wartime abuses in international diplomacy and media companies? They speak more of the same truth to power, he said. Assange had this to say, I think what's emerging in the mainstream media is the awareness that if I can be indicted, other journalists can too. Even the New York Times is worried. This is not this used not to be the case. If a whistleblower was prosecuted, publishers and reporters were protected by the First Amendment, which journalists took for granted. That's being lost. He's referring to guys like Lieberman and Congressman Peter King attempting to create laws or to or the Justice Department to reinterpret the 1917 espionage law as a way of snagging publishers like himself. Remember, the Supreme Court upheld the New York Times' right to publish the Pentagon Papers back in 1973. And Julian Assange is, at the very least, as protected as the New York Times in this whole WikiLeaks publishing of cables and documents. Arguably, he is a half a step removed because he's doing it in conjunction with all these other media outlets. And in some instances, they're the ones who are publishing these things first. I think in many instances, actually. I think that's the agreement he has with them. This is a fascinating story. And when we receive more members, more Majority Report members, and I don't know if I'm talking about in a month or two or 3 months or 4 months down the line, and hopefully 6 months, we'll still be here with basically as a function of your support. You can join at Majority Report, at majority.fm or majorityreportradio.com, it's the same site, and click through to become a member. This is the type of situation where we would be able to, we really pulled off what was a difficult production for us to get the Arizona state legislator on Monday morning.
It's a little touch and go.
It was touch and go. And this is the type of guy I would like to get, you know, when I see a story like this in the morning and I'm like, let's get this guy. But there's a researcher, computer geek type of guy. I shouldn't say geek, but whatever. I mean, for me, that's a compliment. Back in July of 2010, he was detained by U.S. agents at the border. I think it was in Newark. A guy named Jacob Applebaum, who is a Seattle-based programmer, he was detained in New Jersey. I think they took his phones and they took his computer, and he was questioned about WikiLeaks. He was heading to a conference about the Tor project, which I guess is like a sort of like a computer security type of project. And he does security work for WikiLeaks. And he got stopped again the other day. He's a volunteer for WikiLeaks. He got stopped again by U.S. Customs and Border Patrol agents at SeaTac, Seattle-Tacoma International Airport. I guess it was a week ago or January 10th, maybe 5 days ago. 6 days ago. I don't know. What's today? What is it? What did I say today was?
What you said today was, yeah. Or what it is?
Right.
It's the 13th.
13th. This was only 3 days ago. I didn't realize it was January yet. And he live tweeted his getting stopped. Or he tweeted after the fact. Because I'm not sure how he would have tweeted, because now when he travels, he doesn't bring his computer and he doesn't bring any phones. Because he doesn't want to have too much time being stopped. So he is recounting this on Twitter after the fact. And I'll read a couple of these tweets because it's really fascinating. And frankly, folks, I think, you know, in the years to come, we're going to see more of this. This is going to become more and more important. And, you know, on some level, I'm beginning to wonder if, you know, to refer to these stories as WikiLeaks diminishes the impact that each one of these individual stories has. But be that as it may, this is more of the meta story of WikiLeaks, because it is also equally as important. We are watching our government, you know, Peter King, that just, wow. He's so dumb. So malevolent. He chairs the House Committee on Homeland Security. And he asked Treasury Secretary Timothy Geithner Wednesday to prohibit people and companies within the U.S. from doing business with WikiLeaks website. And the prohibition should extend to WikiLeaks founder Julian Assange. Both ought to be placed on the specially designated national and blocked persons list. Did George Orwell come back from the dead to write that up? You know, this is like this type of stuff, like, you know, I don't know, Cuba's on this list, or the specially designated national and blocked persons list, which the Treasury Department can use to bar companies and individuals subject to U.S. jurisdiction from conducting business with a given entity. Based on what? Based on what? If I was the New York Times, I'd be stopping up on drums of ink. That's what I would be doing. So, this guy tweets, and his Twitter feed, we should post this. I just started following him. We should follow this guy from Majority at Majority FM. It's I-O-E-R. Well, it's I-O-Error. I-O-Error. Jacob Applebaum. And I'll read some of these tweets because it's pretty stunning. The CPB, this is the Customs and Border Patrol, specifically wanted laptops and cell phones and were visibly unhappy when they discovered nothing of the sort. He didn't have any. I did, however, have a few USB thumb drives with a copy of the Bill of Rights encoded into the block device. They were unable to copy it. So he put in, like, sort of the Bill of Rights into a thing that would give them a little bit of challenge, but they couldn't open it up. I requested my lawyer and was again denied. They stated I wasn't under arrest, and so I was not able to contact my lawyer. Well, that's convenient. We're holding you. You're not under arrest, so you can't really do anything about it. The CBP agent was waiting for me at the exit gate. Remember when it was our family and loved ones? When I handed over my customs declaration form, the female agent was initially friendly. After pulling my record, she had a sour face. She attempted to trick me by putting words in my mouth. She marked my card with a large box with the number 1 inside, sent me on my way. While waiting for my baggage, I noticed the CBP agent watching me, and of course, after my bag arrived, I was randomly selected for search. Only U.S. Customs has a random number generator worse than a mid-2007 Debian random number generator. I included that just because I thought that was pretty funny. I have no idea what he's talking about. I have no idea what a mid-2007 Debian random number generator. That's like that Steve Martin joke. You know, do you ever hear that live joke? It's like, still this joke is very funny. On the flange! And, we went over really big at the plumbers convention. So only U.S. Customs has a random number generator worse than a mid-2007 Debian random number generator. You know there was some, like, geeks on Twitter just going, oh! Man, I haven't even... Debian. Shit. During the search, I made it quite clear that I had no laptop and no cell phone, only USB drives with the Bill of Rights. The P agent stated that I had posted on Twitter before my flight, and that slip ended the debate about their random selection process. The CBP agents in Seattle were nicer than the ones in Newark. None of them implied I would be raped in prison for the rest of my life this time.
Most people in Seattle are nicer than most people in Newark.
Right. To be fair, you'll get those implications just when you take a taxi in Newark. The CBP agent asked if the ACLU was really waiting. I confirmed the ACLU was waiting, and they again denied me contact with legal help. All in all, the detainment was around 30 minutes long. They all seemed quite distressed that I had no computer and no phone. They were quite surprised to learn that Iceland had computers and that I didn't have to bring my own. There were, of course, the same lies and threats I received last time. They even complimented me on my work done regarding China and Iran. So apparently he does stuff to sort of fight tyrannical regimes, you know, like releasing Google maybe in China. I don't know specifically. I don't know enough about this guy. He goes on to say, I think there's a major disconnect required to do that job and also compliment me on what they consider to be work against police states. I think that's true. I think, you know, well, I'm working on behalf of the United States. What I'm doing is very similar to the work that might happen in those countries, but I'm doing it for America. While it's true that Communist China has never treated me as badly as the CBP, I know this isn't true for everyone who travels to China. He goes on, it took a great deal of thought before I posted about my experience because it honestly appears to make things worse for me in the future. Another one, even if it makes worse things worse for me, I refuse to be silent about state-sponsored systemic detainment, searching, and harassment. Finally, in case it's not abundantly clear, I have not been arrested nor charged with any crime nor indicted in any way. Land of the free? Hardly. I'm sorry, there's a couple more. He talks about how this impacts his ability to work, and it takes a serious emotional toll on him. I can understand that. I'd hate to be searched in this way. What happens if I take a device they can't image? They take it. What about the stuff they give back? Backdoored? Who knows? And then he makes another joke. Does it void a warranty if your government inserts a backdoor into your computer or phone? And finally, he says, nonetheless, safe or not, I won't stop working on Tor. That's the project that he, I guess,
It's a, best I can tell, it's a network system that allows people to anonymously connect over the internet. It's how you get past firewalls and stuff like that in China.
I won't stop working on Tor, nor will I cease traveling. I will adapt, and I will win. A hard road worth taking. That is the attitude of these people, which is why I think in the coming months and years, this is going to become a major, major aspect of our society. And speaking of which, the Obama administration moves forward with a unique ID for all Americans. Commerce Department to head the system up. Did I mention this the other day? You know how Facebook gives you the opportunity to have like one ID across essentially all web platforms? I don't do it. I find it, A, annoying. I find Facebook annoying. B, disturbing when I show up on a page and my picture from Facebook is there. I haven't registered on the page, just some cookie somewhere. But the Obama administration wants the Commerce Department to do this so you don't have to, you know, it enhances people's individual cybersecurity. The only problem is I don't like it. Some, you know, people have had different reactions to this. Some people think it's a good idea, but that it's just too dangerous. And people, and other people are like, well, would you rather a corporation have this stuff? One, you can opt out of a corporation having it. And two, you know, I don't know. I don't know that there's really much of a difference between a corporation having it and the government having it, particularly in the case of, I mentioned the other day, that U.S. subpoenas Twitter, seeking information on WikiLeaks' 635,000 followers. And there was an interesting piece in Wired saying that there's every reason to believe that the U.S. government has subpoenaed Google and Facebook and MySpace and all these other companies in the same manner. It's just that Twitter has been bold enough to fight this. Or not to fight it, but to announce it. Because what happens is they get the subpoena and there's a gag order and you need to fight the gag order. And Twitter did. Which is why they were able to basically make this announcement that, hey, we just want you to know you've been subpoenaed. We can't prevent it, but we can provide some transparency. So kudos to Twitter. Can anyone imagine just 5 years ago that the words kudos to Twitter could actually mean something? Think Progress reported the other day that another patient died from Arizona's Medicaid cuts for organ donors. There was apparently 98 Arizonans who were cut off from the organ donor program, and two now have died because they didn't have the funding to get an organ that they needed. We're talking $4 or $5 million, not even. They've even been offered, Arizona Governor Jan Brewer has even been offered multiple different ways of making up the funding for this. One by Stephen Douglas, an Illinois state GOP central committeeman, just because he felt bad for these people, came up with an idea, sent it on to her, never heard back. Did I do the story yesterday about ISA hearing back from... I get a little bit confused because I sometimes do these stories for Ring of Fire. You know, Daryl ISA put out the call the other day, a week or two ago, said, hey, industry people, what regulations do you want me to gut?
Yeah.
I can't be expected to know all the we need to spread lawlessness, but I don't want to do it in a random way. I want to do it in a way that's going to put more profits into your pockets. And the National Association of Manufacturers came back with the demands for immediate action and attention on the following areas of regulatory policy. If they're not substantially changed from the present form, they could cost millions of jobs and weaken an economy in a still fragile recovery.
I don't think so.
For instance, the EPA rule that would establish more stringent emission standards on industrial and commercial boilers and process heaters. Now, wait a second. Putting in new boilers and heaters is going to cost jobs, as opposed to the people who actually put in these boilers and heaters and produce these boilers and heaters. At a time when corporations are sitting on $2 trillion, they're having record profits, we're led to believe that if they have any more expenses that cut into their profits, they're going to cut jobs. Is that it? As opposed to those companies who are making these things. And then, of course, you know what else costs money? Asthma. Neurological disorders in children. Lack of productivity because you got to take your kid to the neurologist. NAM also, this National American Manufacturers, takes aims at OSHA injury and illness protection plans that require employers to find and fix hazards in their workplace. If we are forced to not subject our workers to risks of bodily harm and injury, it's going to cost jobs. You know, here's my suggestion again. I've said this before. We should have a mandatory maximum rate of pay in this country. It should be, let's call it $3.50 an hour. We should have no child labor laws. We should have no 40-hour work week. We should have no health and safety standards for workers. And for that matter, let's have no health and safety standards for products that are sold to our consumers. And ladies and gentlemen, you will see industry just flourish. You will see industry unshackled from these horrible restrictions. Do you understand how much money candy manufacturers could make if they didn't have to worry about rat feces in their candy? Do you know how many jobs would be created if we only paid people $3 an hour? I mean, we would just see an explosion of economic activity in this country unrivaled by any time, perhaps in the history of, certainly of democracies. Let's do it. Why not? Why not?
Well, I don't, as a libertarian, I don't think government should impose a maximum amount of salary.
Well, let's just get rid of all the safety regulation. Let's just start there. And if your kid dies of poisoning from eating candy because of rat feces or something else, then let the market take care of it. You'll learn not to buy candy from that company again for your next kid. I love the idea that Darrell Issa is trying to repeal all these laws. Because that's what it is. It's lawlessness. Because Darrell Issa, just to give you a quick rundown, 1982, Issa suspected but never charged in arson at his manufacturing plant, according to the LA Times. Series of suspicious burn patterns. And he raised his fire insurance just weeks before it. He's a good businessman. He can see trends. He intimidated an employee with a gun, which he claims shots were never fired when I asked him to. But he brought in a gun, put it on the table. You're fired. I never shot him. He was twice arrested on weapons charges in 1972. He was convicted of possession of an unregistered handgun. He was arrested for auto theft in 1972. Never convicted. I guess his brother was. Also charged with carrying a concealed weapon, according to the San Francisco Chronicle. Charges were ultimately dropped. Innocent until proven guilty. Absolutely. I agree. And you can't, just because there's a pattern of him being arrested, doesn't mean anything. I just find it ironic that he's now trying to create more lawlessness for corporations after lawlessness would have made it much less troublesome for him to have to go down to the police station so much. All right, folks. I went by fast. You can contact me on the IM device. I'm going to run to the boys' room. And so I'll be back in just a moment. And I will take your IMs. And then I'm going to head over to MSNBC. Right back. That was something. All right. Let's go to the IM machine. Hold on, I just got to respond to this email. Let's see. Gaffney, what are you talking about? What's that?
Norquist.
What about Norquist? I didn't see the whole thing.
He wants to pull out of the AFPAC theater, save money.
Oh, right. Yes, I saw that.
So he's furthering the agenda of the Muslim Brotherhood.
Ah, is that it?
Oh. I don't know. I'm just getting
it. Right, 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 right.
Attack that one.
Okay, let's go to this. Jay Shivo, is there really enough hours in the day to read Breitbart tweets? No, you can't read all of them, but, you know, you catch a couple, you get the gist. Sam, you're doing such wonderful work. I wish that money were no object. Just Coffee is absolutely the best coffee I've had since I've toured Europe. Oh, yes. Big shout-out to Neferkitty, attaboy, to your crew, and a site for your consideration, strengthensocialsecurity.org. Susie Madrick did an interview with Eric Kingston on Monday, and he is fabulous. You may want to contact him for your own show. Eric Kingston. I want to see a flurry of activity when I say a name like that twice. Petition to strengthen Social Security. Great. You know, I got to say, Netroots Nation, there was a panel of Social Security people like this, and they came up with this strengthen Social Security thing, and I think it's just horrible messaging. Because when you say strengthen Social Security, you're implying that there's something wrong with it. There is nothing wrong with Social Security at all. Nothing. We should lower the minimum retirement age, at least for 2 or 3 years. Trip, KO said something about bad oysters. Yes, apparently he had oysters yesterday. That's what I heard. Now, I had Clams Casino for breakfast this morning. It was a huge mistake. I had Clams Casino and sushi.
For breakfast?
Yeah, that's my typical breakfast.
You're joking.
No. I had Clams Casino, a conch ceviche, and sushi. Hi, Pop Phil. Sam Scott starts a move to put voucher. Sam Scott? Is that his name? The governor of Florida? Put voucher system in place for $6,000 per kid. Oh, horrible. Horrible vouchers. How, when we have the conversation about entitlements, does Social Security get combined with Medicaid, welfare, food stamps, when the working class is invested and supported and paid for the program since it started? Well, that's exactly why they want to make it a welfare program. That's exactly why they want to give you a rebate on your payroll tax, because they want to crumble away at the political underpinnings of this program. If the government damages your smartphone or computer operation, who pays? Well, I suppose you could sue them. Sam, not if you don't pay for the kid to get care. I mean, the transplant thing would give you a cow a new heart just because it still gave milk. I don't know what that means. You can't. It's tough for you to IM me in real time, because I'm not in real time with that. Palin said, acts of monstrous criminality begin and end with the criminals who commit them. Begin and end, sorry, but if that cabbie who dropped off Loeffner had been the one who had put the loaded weapon in his hands, if that cabbie had said, here you go, gun, shoot, Palin wouldn't have wanted to hold that person even remotely responsible. And what if, instead of telling him to shoot, he had just showed Loeffner a map with crosshairs on it? Whenever Republicans talk about personal responsibility, it's always make the case they're not in any way responsible for anything. Well, look, criminality, I would agree, begins and ends with the criminals who commit them. If you give somebody a gun, say, go shoot them, that person, you're a criminal accomplice. And I'm not saying that Sarah Palin should be shackled and thrown into jail. That's not what I'm saying. She has no criminality. She's not criminally responsible for this. But don't we have any other code in this society short of what I can be arrested for? That's the point. Sarah Palin's not criminally liable for this. Of course not. She's not civilly liable for this. But we do have institutions that should be disincentivizing the type of rhetoric that our political leaders are using. Period. She doesn't understand that any more than that Twitter guy understands it. They refuse to see that because they know there is some measure of responsibility there. That doesn't mean criminal liability. That doesn't mean civil liability. That just means some measure of responsibility. Tor stands for the Onion Router and hides your IP address behind onion-like layers of security. Thank you, Heathen Stephen. Dorsey, Norquist, time to talk about... Oh, yeah, what will Gaffney say? Okay, yeah, Sugar High, is it really possible to have meaningful regulation? As we've seen in the financial industry, regulation is not permanent. It just becomes a matter of ongoing struggle requiring constant mobilization of the average people. Well, yes. No, there, it is possible. And we do have meaningful regulation. It underpins our society in such a way that you don't really even realize it. I mean, it's not perfect, but there's a reason why we don't have more poisoning of our food supply than we have. There is a reason why I can go down to the store and buy food and be reasonably 98%, 90%, I don't know what the percentage is, but reasonably confident that I'm not going to get food poisoning from it. Same with drinking my water. Same with, is it okay to let my kid walk outside after a snowstorm? Is it okay for my kid to live in my apartment? The regulation of no lead paint. You know, when Nikki and I moved back to the city, we were looking at an apartment. You know, I had to come down for Break Room Live. And we found a cheap apartment. We were very psyched. Went there the day. Nikki, we were looking around. We're like, this place looks really super old. It was a little run down. But it was a good size for a New York City apartment, and it was in a good location. But it was a little rundown. It hadn't, you know, it probably nobody had touched it in a long time. And I brought a lead guy in there to do a lead inspection. He's got like a radar gun. They put up on the wall, and he goes, "Okay, if it 9 is a lot of lead, 1 is little, and." You know, the less lead there, the quicker it'll give us a response. Puts it up against the wall. Presses the button. Looks at it. Looks back at me. Looks at it again. Looks back at me, and he goes, "This is sort of a long time." Beep. And he looks at it, and he goes, "Holy crap."
Wow.
It's like, I can't tell you how much lead is there, because it's off. It's greater than... we have a measurement for.
That's a bank vault right there is what that is.
And we had already signed the lease. And I said, well, you know, if you paint it all over, the danger is that the kid will ingest it.
Right.
So if you paint it all over, you may be okay. And I said, we'll take some swaths on the floor. Because, you know, the floor was not terribly finished. And by that I mean, like, you know, it wasn't like sort of like a smooth coat like this, and you know, it was all there, it was everywhere. And I said, would you let your kid in here? And he's like, nah, if I had a choice. And so I called up the. Now there are regulations against this, or not. You can have lead, but not if you have a kid living in there. There's a responsibility for this lead to be abated. And lead abatement in an apartment like that would probably cost like $50,000, $60,000, $70,000. So I called up the broker, and I said, look, we got a problem. I just had a lead test, and there's a lot of lead in there. Well, you signed the lease. What do you want me to do? Well, we have two options. One is I call the Department of Health, and I say, we got a lead problem, and the Department of Health gets in touch with the landlord, and he has to start an abatement process within 30 days. Or two is you give me my deposit back, and you promise me you're not going to show this apartment to anybody with a kid. Because adults, it doesn't, you know, our systems have developed in such a way that we can process lead better than kids.
And we're not going to eat paint chips.
And so it took about 20 minutes, and they said, okay, we're going to send the send the check over. Macintologists, Randy Rhodes, Monica Verbona. I don't think Sarah made the shooter shoot. I don't even think all of the smack talk contributed to his state of mind, but it certainly contributes to our state of mind. Well, you know, look, who knows? We don't know. We don't know. This is not, you know, you're going to draw a direct correlation here. I mean, if the guy had a stack of Palin posters in his apartment, it wouldn't draw a direct correlation. There's so many factors involved in this. The question is it irresponsible for political leaders to be potentially such a to potentially be a factor? That's the question. And, you know, well, you didn't watch political news and this. Well, she wasn't random. He wasn't interested in politics at all. Well, then why did he go after a congresswoman? I mean, let me ask you this. Walk around your neighborhood today. Go down to the local Pathmark. Ask people who their congressperson is. Do you think they know who their congressperson is? Do you think even 60% of the people know who their congressperson is? No. Okajik. Only caught 2 minutes of today's show. Tor. I am a cybersecurity field. Tor is a series of random proxy servers. I use it to monitor hate group sites. They see me as connecting from Belgium and Austria. It's random. But for regular web surfing, it's impractical because it's very slow. I'll listen to today's podcast to see if I can give any insight into your discussion of cybersecurity. I am not a government employee. Sure, you're not. Sure. Jimmy Reefer Cake. Please take no offense. But for me, the argument with the Twitter guy was not so good for me. Bottom line is that right-wingers love their guns, so that's the terms they use. I will sit out the shit-flinging spectacle, but I will ask the question, does the government ban on marijuana lead to distrust and tendency to believe conspiracy theories? Could this one have been nipped in the bud? Pun not in, but enjoy the question. Answer the question. Does the government's ban on marijuana lead to a distrust and tendency to believe conspiracy theories? You got to be a little more specific. I mean, if you're saying, is it a conspiracy theory that the government bans marijuana because it's a substance that pharmaceutical companies may not be able to make money off of, or that it may decrease productivity, or that it, I don't know that that's a conspiracy theory. Does the government's ban on marijuana lead to a conspiracy theory that about 9/11? I don't see how that's the case. People see the hypocrisy and they react in disgust. Okay, you've answered your question. But hypocrisy itself does not lead to conspiracy theories. I mean, I'll tell you what leads to conspiracy theories. Things like finding out that the Gulf of Tonkin was bullshit. That the sinking of the, what do you call it, off the coast of Cuba, bullshit. That, voodoo histories.
Have you heard of this guy?
No.
Aronovich? He's obsessed with conspiracy theories, but he's obsessed with debunking every, like, if any conspiracy theory out there, it's totally, there's nothing behind it. But he goes through all these old, you know, things like, Let's see here. The CIA overthrowing Shah or overthrowing the government in Iran, putting the Shah in. You know, he like details all these things.
So he's saying that's not accurate?
No, he's saying, oh, this is why people believe in conspiracy theories, because of conspiracies that have actually happened. It's a weird book. I don't.
Right.
I'm not quite understanding.
Well, the CIA did take out the guy who preceded the Shah. It did put in the Shah brand. The CIA did help get rid of Salvador Allende. That's why people have conspiracy theories, because they find out that there have been, well, I mean, is that a conspiracy? I guess, yes.
Yeah,
I mean,
conspiracy
is a pretty broad term, but I don't think that there is the same type of line. And it's, the point is, bottom line, right-wingers love their guns. Exactly. And that's what makes it that much more irresponsible to say, use them in a political context. You could say this to, I could say to, you know, some anti-gun advocacy advocate and say, violent overthrow of the U.S. government, grab your gun. And they just look at me like, no way.
Or even a liberal gun owner supporter, you know, gun rights supporter, they're not going to be like, yeah, let's overthrow the government to keep our guns.
No, I mean, of course not. I mean, the way rhetoric works is you appeal to what you know is the, you know, sort of the who your audience is. And that's just the way it is. I mean, that's just the way it is. You know why reefer is illegal? It's a big-ass conspiracy. Well, I mean, I think there's more specifics to it than that. But yes, I've just said that. Kevin, 11-7-21. Palin accepts the connection between rhetoric and speech. She complained that pointing out her rhetoric could be dangerous to her. Try that again. Palin accepts the connection between violent rhetoric and violent acts. She complained that drawing attention to her violent rhetoric could be dangerous to her. Yes. Okajik, conspiracy theories. Don't forget FBI's COINTELPRO. Yes, exactly. But I agree the majority of these theories are baseless. Well, they're not even baseless. They're based on something, and that's where they take off from. And the reason why we have those conspiracy theories is because there's a certain lack of transparency, and when you have a void, when you have an absence of information, that vacuum is filled. I mean, I remember distinctly saying to, maybe it was Ciro, maybe it was Rosen, I can't remember, but at one point walking around Air America, saying to a board op, you know, this is like 2008, 2009, saying to somebody like, you know, it would be irrational for some of our listeners not to think there was a mole in Air America, because there's almost virtually no other explanation for how poorly this place is run. It just so happens that up close, I can see that it's sort of like, it's not quite that nefarious. It's a sort of a combination of wrong personnel and total incompetence and self-serving decisions. But I said, like, you know, like I understand more about projecting certain conspiracies onto situations based upon how it would look from the outside, because it's almost inexplicable, and I'm right in the middle of it, and I see it every day, and I could not sit there and draw a clear diagram on how fucked up this place is. I mean, you know what I'm saying? Is that, like, you can, like, I don't know how somebody from the outside couldn't look at that and go, like, somebody's purposely trying to sabotage it from within.
It's like you can't even make it up. It's so...
And,
ridiculous.
You know, because there's no transparency there, people make that determination because, and it wouldn't be a rational guess. I mean, you know, I still have my questions about some of those guys in there.
Some people are doing just fine today that were there.
Right. Well, and it's a, you know.
Because of being there, you know.
Well, but what I'm talking about is you have people there who, you know, let's use the initials S.E. Okay, you know what I'm talking about. He was one of the longest-running employees there. His politics were definitely, you know, definitely to the right of center, as most of the actual executives were over time.
Pinstripe suits.
Well, Bennett Zier, the only political contribution I could find for him was to Mitt Romney. He was the last CEO of Air America. That's public knowledge. You can find that. But most of these guys, more than anything, at the end of the day, maybe they had disdain for the people who worked there because they were liberals, which I think is true. Certainly of Bennett Zier. He definitely hated everyone there because they were liberal. There was real contempt. And, you know, when people say to me, like, you shouldn't say stuff, you know, when you mock, you know, someone wrote to me, like, when you mock the South, not Larry Sabato said this to me on Twitter. You know, part of the reason why people vote against, one party is because they think it's full of elites who make fun of them. Because I made that joke about the South. Well, I got news for you. This motherfucker, Bennett Zier, came in with a, I don't know, how much does a watch like that go for? $1,000? Shoes cost $700. Suits cost $1,000. Walks in Washington, going to every elite function, whatever it was. There's no way Bennett Zier is less of an elite than me. Okay? And he loathed, not just me, but like you, Dorsey, the grubbiness. He'd walk around and say, like, this isn't the Peace Corps. What the fuck does that mean?
Every day he would walk through the intern row where I, you know, sat with the interns, and he would clap his hands together, saving the world today. We're going to save the world today.
With derision. His visceral hatred was not about we think that we are elites. It's him projecting, and this is the perfect insight into the conservative mind. It is them projecting. Maybe accurately, maybe not, projecting upon others that they are judging me. This, in other words, Bennett is judging everybody from the lowly intern to Dorsey to anybody else. You think you're better than me because you give a shit about other people. That's what's in the conservative mind. And that's why when you listen to Limbaugh or any other conservative radio show, the message is you don't need to care about other people. And those other people who are do-gooders, they're not better than you. They think they're better than you. So elite is simply a code word for people who actually think about other people instead of themselves. And these guys weren't trying to tear down Air America because they were liberal. They hated the people there because they were liberal. But they were just basically just trying to make a buck. And were doing it in the way that they knew how, which was to enrich their buddies in the radio industry. So when it comes time to sending out a mailer, what am I going to do? Am I going to spend the money in a smart way, get help from, shops that do mailers, you know, that are willing to give us a discount rate because they agree with our politics and they've been doing this professionally in the context of, you know, like political consulting? Or am I going to go to the same hack who does Clear Channel, who may be in a position to hire me when I'm at, the local easy listening station? Easy choice. Yeah, it'll fuck up and fail. Our ratings may even go down after this mailer. We waste $500,000. But so what? I don't give a shit about the bottom line of this company. I care about my bottom line. I mean, the biggest irony I ever, faced there was when one of the owners said to me, you know, Sam, you're not a team player. And I'm like, are you fucking kidding me? Are you fucking kidding me? Do you know how many times I skipped a check at the beginning of this place? How many times I took bounce checks? How many times I did, you know, the shit that I've done? When they say you're not a team player, what they're saying is, like, you're not on our executive team. Our team, we have different rules than the team that makes the success of the company. Oh, right. Your team is supposed to bilk you out. I mean, what this guy didn't realize is that the team that he thought I wasn't on was bilking him of money. Bilking him. Jan Skaven, did you enjoy how the New York Times insulted blue-collar auto workers on the front page today, stating the car makers will have to keep their historically restive workforce? Yeah, nice. I didn't see that. Tor was used by the Iranian opposition to evade authorities after the contested election, says De Bajuana. It's all about a projection, the regressive attitude. Okay, folks, that's it for today. So, Sam, when can you write the book about Air America? Someone needs to. It's probably true. Push Shorty Awards. Brian Beutler, Boehner didn't really snub Obama Giffords rally. I'll check that out. Push Shorty Awards. Oh, Dorsey. Oh, those Shorty Awards. I'm not sure I understand what those are. If you don't plan to care for the herd, it doesn't matter what the EPA law they get rid of. All right, folks. Got to run. We'll be back tomorrow. Let's see. Thanks, folks. I guess somewhere the choice is made. For the option where you don't get paid. For the road that bends before it finally breaks you. I guess somehow I lost my drive.